Hello, everybody. So happy. Always happy to be here with each of you, but especially in this moment in time. I've been thinking so much about us as a group, as a circle, and also about each of you individually. And I hope that you're all doing well. And that you're, you know, I haven't spoken yet to anyone that's moving through this time with, you know, just no stress or anything like that. But I hope you're moving through really taking care of yourself. And, well, of course, I want to spend our time today on our module and our training at hand. I do want to just take a couple of minutes, just a few right now, before we move into our module, to just, you know, honor and acknowledge all that's going on in the world right now and the difficulties and the stress that it may be bringing up, the anxiety that it might be bringing up, the fear that it might be bringing up. All of that is totally normal. Even the meltdowns. I will admit that I have had a meltdown or two in the last couple of days. One of the things that I've really been noticing as I've been speaking to clients, as I've been connecting with others, speaking to friends, whoever it is that this pandemic, one of the things that it's doing is whatever fears or limiting beliefs or anxieties that you had before all of this started, this pandemic, for most people, for a lot of people, I'll say, in my experience so far, is amplifying those fears. So I point this out because if that's landing for you in your situation, I think it's an important piece of an awareness, right? That whatever the fears that are coming up, chances are, in one way or another, they were there in some form beforehand. And that's not to say that they shouldn't be amplified right now, right? I mean, there's a lot going on. But in terms of you managing your fears, your stress and anxiety, you know, whatever it is, I think it can be a really valuable connection to make to see that what you're working on and working with right now in maybe a more dramatic way is actually what you've probably been working on for some time right now. So let's just take a moment and look at that a little bit more. What's your biggest fear that's been coming up as this pandemic has been evolving? Just note for yourself, you may have multiple fears, but what's the one that's been coming up the most or feeling the biggest for you? For those of you that are Harry Potter fans, I've been likening this to the Bogarts. The Bogarts in Harry Potter are like, it's kind of like a monster that for each person that sees it, the person sees their biggest fear in that monster. So what's the fear that's been coming up for you the most? And how is it related to whatever you were working with or handling or navigating since even before all of this started? What connections can you make there for yourself? We're not going to do a full exploration of this right now, just, you know, these couple of touch point questions. You can go from there with it, work your befriend your fear processes with it, you know, all of that. So what are you noticing? What are the connections even before this started? And I'm almost hesitant to ask this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway because I think it is appropriate. I hope it's not too early to ask this question. What's the opportunity here for you through the connections that you're seeing and through the fears that are coming up for you? What's the opportunity for you personally in all of this as it relates to your fears? And then finally, and this question is a really important one, what are the practices that you have in place or are planning to put in place in order to support your psyche, your emotional state, your nervous system, your soul? What are the practices that you already have in place or are planning to put in place to really support you, your emotional life, your psyche, your soul, your nervous system? I'd love to hear from one or two of you, star two to raise your hand. What are you seeing? What's important? What do you want to share around all of this? Leah. Oh, I took you off. Here, I'm going to take you off mute again, Leah. There you go. You there?
I'm still on mute. Am I still on mute?
Nope. I can hear. We can hear you. Yay!
It's on my computer that I'm on mute. I jumped on a little bit late, but I can tell where you guys were in that meditation because today I was instantly like struck with just fear around just humanity as a whole, like trying to hold space for humanity as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things where it's like, as much as I try to avoid the news or whatnot, because I know I need to be in my groups and on social, you know, I end up getting into the energy and the vibes and things of others. And I was already having a lot of that scarcity and fear over my own things in life. So then to like bring this upon and be like, wow, I'm not like in this little isolated bubble, even though I'm in a very small town in Driggs and we're now in quarantine. I'm not in this isolated bubble as far as like how close to the surface those fears lie.
Yeah.
And so it's been very interesting because even when you just said like, where's the opportunity? I accidentally jumped on live on my like page rather than my group today. And it's just seeing people pop in that aren't in my group and are just friends.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, I actually like need to send out love to the entire community.
Yeah.
Like, this was intended. I wasn't prepared for this, but like, this isn't about my little group that I, you know, I've been managing. Like, this is about reminding everyone to lean in and to get that time outside and in the sun. It's actually sunny here today. We're planning on getting out for a little cross-country ski. It's like connecting in with nature, or if you're in a place that you can't connect in, like even opening up the window, like leaning into the fact that some places with a lot of pollution, their air is clearing, there's blue sky.
Yes, I love it. And I love that by accident you went live.
Actually,
your entire community. It's really
actually, I need to like send all this love out and realize we're supporting the earth. We're supported by the earth. This is our moment to pause. And even though we haven't, we didn't intend our pause, we're being forced to slow down as a whole and as a humanity. And so getting in place those meditation practices or that opportunity to be outside, you know, dig your feet into the ground or open up a window, you know, just slowing down is so key.
Yeah. I love it. Thank you. And I love that you can go cross-country skiing. That's awesome.
I know. We can get out in the woods and not see anyone, which is nice.
Good. Thank you. All right. Stephanie.
Hi, Joanna.
Hi.
Hi. You know, I almost wasn't going to get on the call today because I have been in such a shaky place today, and I'm going to try to like talk without crying because that's
just
where I'm
at. Okay. Yeah. And it's okay if you do. I cried this morning. Okay.
But it was actually really, I really appreciated the way you framed it of like these fears that are coming up are the ones you had before. Because when I looked at it, it was so true. You know, it's like fears around, I'm not going to be able to make enough money, that I don't know enough to protect myself. And like the big one being like people that I love are going to die.
Yeah.
And it's not that those things aren't a reality and are happening to some people. Sure. But like looking at it as like when I'm experiencing that, I'm looking at my fears. I'm not looking at my reality.
Yeah.
And that's actually a really great check for me when I start to go down.
No, that's exactly. That's exactly why I'm bringing it up, right? I mean, we have to take everything seriously for sure, but we also have to recognize when we're going down the rabbit hole of the fears and how this pandemic is actually just triggering so many fears that are just there under the surface or over, above.
Yeah, so close under the, like stuff that I thought I'd dealt with and like, nope. But yeah, I also really love the question about practices, because I can see very clearly that Facebook is not a part of what I need to be doing right now, because that's a huge trigger.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just need to get outside more. I mean, that's what I tell other people to do, and I'm not practicing that. So that's a good reminder.
Yeah. This is a moment for us all to practice what we preach even
more.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. I'm glad you came on the call.
Thanks.
And I'll take one more. Lucia.
Hey, Joanna, am I on?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Thanks for offering that space. I'm in this really interesting state that I want to hear your reflection on if possible, and that is that I am not panicking at all, that I'm actually not really feeling anything at all. I have a lot of like thoughts about everything, but I'm feeling super clear and calm, and there is a part of me that's like, I should feel fear, I should feel panic, everybody's feeling fear and everybody's feeling panic, I'm so sensitive, why do I not feel panic, do I deny anything? But then when I check and I don't feel I'm denying anything, I feel just like, yeah, this is what it is, and we have to take it day by day, you know, there's not much we can do, so why worry?
So, I mean, there's a chance that there's something that you're not tapping into, right? And so I would just say, for sure, continue to ask yourself, because you want to feel all the feels and, you know, see the emotions if they're there. So continue to check in. But what I will say, Lucia, is like from what I know of you, I don't have a word for this kind of person. It's like a fifth dimension person. I'm not sure what it is, but my sense of you is that you're one of those special people, like almost with a little bit of Aquarian energy. You are sensitive in so many ways, but in other ways, I feel like your energy kind of transcends and you see like bigger truths from like a higher point place. And if that's true, you aren't going to feel as much of the emotion in this. You're going to see it from a very different perspective. Does that land for you?
Land so much that I feel truly seen and almost crying because, yeah, that feels so much of my truth, you know, and, yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah, and we need, like, we need all of us in all of our ways, and we need the people like you, that, again, for lack of a better term, like those fifth dimensional, you know, that see it from the eye bird point of view. So, yeah. Don't make it wrong, but continue to check in with yourself also.
Mm-hmm. And thanks for the email that you sent around. I read it just before we came on here, and it felt really, really good. So bless your heart and bless your family and bless yourself. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome. Okay, good. So, and as I said in that letter and in our Facebook group, I'm here. I'm here for you, whatever you need. Please let our circle know, let me know. You know, this is a moment to, always a moment to be in community, but especially a moment to really be in community and to lean in. Okay, so all that being said, hopefully that can prepare us to really be open to receive the work for today on our call. And today's call is an interesting one. It's a little bit different. It's about systems, logistics, templates, all of that. Everything that we need before starting to work with a coaching client or any client, during and after when it comes to systems and logistics. And I just want to tell you off the bat, of course, you know how I'm going to teach this is going to be different than anyone else out there. The way we're going to look at this today is through the lens that logistics and systems are actually way deeper than you might think. They're about so much more than simply the document that is the scheduling email or the contract or the welcome packet or the progress report. We're going to look at all of those things practically, but there's actually a lot of depth and human behavior that we need to look at that goes into it. So the bigger concept behind creating, executing, and upholding all of your systems, and again, by systems, I mean things like scheduling emails, rescheduling emails, contracts, welcome packets, progress reports. We'll go into all the different things, but the bigger, the deeper concept behind creating and upholding all of these things is really about the energetics and holding a strong and powerful container for the coaching relationship. I'm going to say that again, and you'll see more what I mean as we move forward. But logistics, systems, contracts, templates, all of that, aside from the, like, this is when we schedule, and this is how much it costs, and, you know, all the different things, this is really about the energetics and the container. If you remember back to our very first call in Sacred Depth, part of the fiber of aligned energetics in the coaching relationship is creating and maintaining a strong container. The container is what helps promote trust, vulnerability, appreciation, motivation, forward movement. So then how is it that something like a confirmation email for a session or a welcome packet can help create and maintain a powerful container? What am I talking about here? Well, because these things create clarity and they create confirmation around expectations in the coaching relationship for both the coach or the practitioner and the client. Right? So, for example, we'll be meeting at this time, the investment is this much. All of that is clarity and confirmation around expectations around what the relationship is going to be. And clarity and confirmation around expectations are what create a sense of safety, right? One of the reasons, you know, just to take what's happening in the world right now, one of the reasons, it's not all of the reasons, but one of the reasons why there is not so much a sense of safety for so many people is because all of the expectations are out the window. So safety is part of creating the container. When you know what to expect from someone else, and when you know what is expected of you, right? So think about this from the client point of view. When you know what to expect from your coach or your practitioner or whatever group you're in, and when you know what's expected of you in that relationship, then you can settle in. You can relax. You don't need to worry, you know, will she be there for me in this way or won't she? Am I supposed to show up in this way or am I supposed to show up in that way? How many emails can I send? When will she respond, right? There's a sense of peace and safety and reliability when all parties know and agree upon expectations. And then when those expectations are reinforced throughout the relationship. And that's another important piece that we're going to talk about today. It's not just about setting up the expectations. It's about how are you holding them through the course of the relationship. Right? And so, again, this is not just in our practices. Like, we can see this in our lives. I see this a lot when my kids were toddlers, right? When they had routines, when I wasn't so great at upholding routines, I'll just be honest with my toddlers. But, you know, those stuff that they could rely on, that's when they would kind of calm down more, right? Lunch is at this time. We didn't have nap time, but let's pretend we did. With my kids, we did. Nap time was at this time, right? So I was once on a sales call with a healer. I wasn't conducting the sales call. I was considering hiring this healer. And she said to me on the sales call that her program was $1,200 for 7 weeks. And would I like to buy, right? We had a conversation before that about what my issue was and all that. And then she said, okay, well, my program is $1,200 and it's 7 weeks. Do you want to step in? There was no way that I could step into a container like that. That did not feel safe to me. It felt risky and it felt vague. And it felt like there were a lot of unknowns, right? Like, I asked her, when she said that to me, I asked her questions like, well, how many sessions in those 7 weeks? How long are these sessions? What do you think that we're going to be able to accomplish over these 7 weeks? You know, how what's going to happen? What can we do? So starting off powerfully makes all of the difference. It's part of the container setting, like I said. When you coach, that container starts to get set and created well before your first session. I'm going to say this again. You want to start setting and creating your container with your clients well before your first session. If you don't do that, then either the first session will be shaky, and even possibly subsequent sessions will be shaky, or I've heard of first sessions not even happening. So someone says yes, they may even pay, but if you don't set all of the containers correctly, you may not even get to do the work. The person may step out because there isn't that strong container that's set. The more clear that you can be from the get-go, the less misunderstandings that there are going to be, the less confusion that there's going to be, and the more structure there'll be so that everybody can settle in. And as I said, contracts and welcome packets are a big part of starting off powerfully and setting the container. So when someone steps in to work with you, and you're thinking about contracts, and you're thinking about welcome packets. And actually, let me just take a step back on this, because not everybody may know what a contract and a welcome packet is. So first, let me just say, you guys all have in your member section a bonus training from a lawyer who, her name is Gina Shingle Jaffe. Some of you may have heard of her. And she did for Sacred Depths a bonus training on legal aspects of coaching. She's a lawyer by training, and she works specifically with coaches on legal issues. And I wanted to really just provide that for all of you to get an introduction into the legal aspects of coaching. I'm going to be sharing with you today and in the worksheets and resource sheets that you get from our call today about contracts. But what's important for me to say legally is that I am not a lawyer, right? So I'm not, what I share with you isn't from the legal point of view when it comes to having contracts with clients. It's more from what, you know, how I've introduced this call, which is about how to get the strongest start and, you know, relationship with the client and how to create the container. Gina's call will fill in some of the details on the more official legal aspects of it. I also share with you as part of the resource packet for our training today a sample contract. Again, not from a legal standpoint. It's the one that it's a version of one that I use, and you can feel free to use it in any way that you like. Okay, so that being said, we're going to talk a little bit more later in the call about, you know, contracts and welcome packets. But for now, I just want to share they're a really big part of starting off powerfully. Contract is the legal document that you have in place that both you and your client are going to sign. And I use this, you all signed one for Sacred Depths. I use this both for one-on-one and for groups. so that, you know, that there's a, you know, it does all the things that a contract is going to do. A welcome packet often will have a lot of the same information as the contract. But it's not a legal document, and it'll have additional information in it. And I'll get to what all of those things are. But, you know, as an example, in both the contract and the welcome packets, you're going to want to address and get clear on things like how many sessions, how long are the sessions, are you including email or other types of communication in whatever package you're selling? if so, what's the turnaround time, right? How long does it take you to answer an email? So, for example, I'm clear with my one-on-one clients. I offer email support. I let them know, you know, I usually will answer quicker than 48 hours, but that I have a 48-hour turnaround time, and, you know, I speak to holidays and weekends and all of that. You want to think about and address, what if a client needs extra time? How are you going to address that, right? So let's say you have 10 sessions in your package, but a client needs an extra session. Is that something that is just available to them because you're on retainer, or is that something that they're going to pay extra for? You don't only want to think through each of these things, but you really want to state them in the contract, in the welcome packet. You're going to want to think about and get clear on, what does payment look like? How are you taking payments, right? Is it credit card? Is it PayPal? All of that. How can the client make the payments? What's the protocol for that? What happens if a payment fails, or what happens if there's a late payment? You're going to want to think about confidentiality, and what are your confidentiality policies. You're going to think about how you schedule. What is your reschedule policy and protocol? What's the scope of your work, right? So what I mean by that is, like, for myself, you know, I'm very clear on what parts of a business and, you know, coaching skills and all of that I can help clients with, and then what parts, you know, like investments, not my thing, not going to help you with that. Legal advice about your business, not my thing, not, can't help you with that, right? So you want to, especially for that in the contract, be very clear on what you are and what you're not. And again, I'll, you know, for those of you that need support with this, who haven't had a contract before, want to brush up on your contracts, I'll give you, like I said, a sample. You're going to want to be clear and state, you know, if you work with someone on the phone, for example, like I do with clients, you know, what happens if they call and I don't pick up the phone right away? What's the protocol? What's the system for that? That may seem like, huh, what? Like, why do we need to address that? But again, back to containers, back to understanding expectations and how that creates safety in the container. Some people may start to get really nervous if they call and the practitioner doesn't pick up, right? So we want everybody to have the same expectations and understandings. What if you want to terminate the relationship? What does that look like? Is there a refund policy? What is that? And then I always like to include, what are the coach's responsibilities, or what are the practitioner's responsibilities, and what are the client's responsibilities? So what I mean by that is, you know, how am I going to show up for my clients, right? And I'm very clear in my welcome packet about what they can expect from me, and how I'm going to show up, and how I'm going to hold them, you know, their visions for them, and how I'm going to help hold them accountable, and how I'm going to call them out on their BS. I'm also very clear on, you know, what I, you know, in terms of responsibilities, like sometimes I'll do some copy editing, but I'm very clear on, like, I'm not a copy editor. I won't look at every little piece of your copy. You know, I'll make suggestions on some, right? So you want to be really clear on what are your responsibilities, what aren't, and then what are your clients' responsibilities, right? What do you expect of them? What are those shared expectations? So, for example, for me, one of my expectations is that if a client is upset with something that I've done or said, that they let me know as soon as possible, right? So things like that. Okay, so all of this might sound pretty simple, pretty easy, right? However, it can often feel actually pretty hard or kind of heavy, either really challenging to set out in the first place, or I see this happen a lot, like people can do the contract, the welcome packet, have the protocol, share the protocol, state the protocols, all the things, but it actually feels really hard to enforce. Like you have, for example, you have a policy that if somebody doesn't show up for a session, they get charged anyway, but then when it happens in reality, it feels really hard to enforce. Some people, they just even have trouble saying, this is the protocol, right? This is how we handle things. And that has to do with having healthy and aligned boundaries. I'm going to say that again. That has to do with having healthy and aligned boundaries. And I will share with you that this particular topic is one that I have had to do a lot of my own personal work on. So I could give you so many stories, but I'll just, you know, tell you a few from when I first started my practice. You know, one not story, but just example is that if I had to go over time with a client, I would just go over time and over time and over time. And even though I was clear in my contracts and my protocols, the session is 45 minutes, it was like I was too scared. If I felt like the client needed more, you know, kept on wanting to go, I was too scared to end it at a particular time. I was even, I mean, this is probably not going to be the case for any of you, but just, you know, to normalize things, if you have any stuff going on with boundaries, I'll just share you some of these things because they're extreme. Like for me, I was even scared. You know, when I first started my business, I took cash and check only. You've got to remember, guys, this was a very long time ago, so people paid things in cash and check all the time. But as my practice grew and as my business got bigger, I realized that the, you know, going to the bank every week and keeping track of every dollar and every payment and all the things and people forget, you know, it just wasn't going to work anymore. And I knew I could see pretty clearly that I needed to move to credit card payments, automatic credit card payments. But I was scared, which seems so silly now, right? But I was scared that, like, my clients were going to get angry that I was getting too corporate or whatever it was, that I was going to be moving to credit, you know, ongoing credit card payments. I used to, you know, I had a couple of instances where people had failed payments and failed payments and failed payments month after month, and I didn't address it at all, but I kept on serving them, right? Not so good, not such good boundaries. Now, we could do a full call just on boundary setting and on activating what I like to call the warrior woman archetype. That's what's really needed here if you've got any stuff around boundaries, is to bring in the warrior woman archetype. But because there's just so much that I want us to take a look at today, we're just going to spend a couple of minutes right now on this. So what is the warrior woman? Who is the warrior woman, or warrior, or just the warrior? It doesn't have to be a woman. The warrior is the one who knows how to set healthy boundaries. She knows how to serve, and how to serve deeply, and how to serve well without taking over responsibility for others. The warrior is the one who knows how to honor her own space and time and energy. She knows how not to let people walk all over her, make her a doormat. And she also knows how to really, she understands her own limits and what is important for her. She respects others while she respects herself. She knows how to be lovingly fierce when it comes to upholding boundaries for herself and for others. And for those of you that are into yoga, think about the warrior poses in yoga. All of those poses are stances where you're actually in a very clear and focused way setting a boundary without being aggressive. That's what I think of, some of what I think of when it comes to that warrior woman. Okay, so all that being said, take a moment and note for yourself, where do you struggle when it comes to setting boundaries with your clients? And if you don't have any clients, you can honestly, you can just think about it with anyone, with colleagues, friends, family members. If you have clients, focus on clients. Where do you struggle when it comes to setting boundaries with your clients? Sometimes, I already gave a bunch of examples. I'll give a couple more. Like, sometimes people will tell me, oh, my clients text me all the time. And my thing is like, there could be a boundary there about texting only if there's an emergency or if you're late for a session, but it doesn't have to, that doesn't need to be the form of, you know, my clients don't text me just because, right? Boundaries can be about how long you're holding your sessions, how much you're checking in. Next question, what's the impact of having trouble setting or enforcing those particular boundaries? What have you seen the impact be on you, your energy, your business, and even your relationship with the client? What's the impact when you have trouble setting or upholding those boundaries? It might directly relate to your bank account, right? Because if you're spending so much time on each of your particular clients, it's hard to take in more clients. It might have impact on your energy. It might have impact on the relationship itself, right? Like you think that you're strengthening the relationship by giving and giving and giving and giving, but is your client either maybe respecting you less, or are you starting to bring some bitterness to it or victimhood to the energetics or something else, right? Sometimes a boundary, by the way, is also, you know, you started a client off at a low rate. Maybe it was when you were first starting your practice and your rates have, you've raised your rates quite a bit since then, but you just haven't been able to raise it with that particular client. You know, is that a boundary issue? May or may not be, right? Something to think about. So if you do have trouble setting boundaries or upholding boundaries, There are some reasons. We've already looked at some of these in our first call on energetics and container, but I want to just go a little bit deeper now so we can see specifically how it relates to boundaries. So one reason why you might have trouble setting or upholding boundaries is if you're someone who is skilled at overgiving. Then chances are you're also someone who pretty consistently takes over responsibility for other people in your life. Taking over responsibility means that you don't think your partner will really be able to take care of the kids or take care of them well, so you cut your work or your social time to be at home. Taking over responsibility means that you don't really trust that your clients will do the work that you assigned them to do. So then you spend lots of time on email and checking in on them over and over again so that you quote-unquote make sure that they're moving ahead. Taking over responsibility could mean that you undercharge for your services because you don't actually trust that your prospect will value themselves enough to make a higher financial commitment in the work that you do together. If you look at overgiving in this way, it looks a little bit like overgiving and over-responsibility might have to do with needing to be in control because you don't trust in other people to take care of things or get things done or take responsibility for themselves. If you recognize the tendency of taking over responsibility for others in your life, whether it's your business, your life, then I want you to really consider what I'm going to say next, really take it in. By taking over responsibility for others, you are actually not helping them out. On the outset, you might think that you are, but truly, if you try and play God and take on the responsibility that others should be taking for themselves, you're robbing them of the opportunity to step up to the plate, to develop themselves, and to feel good about having and holding responsibility. I'll just give you a personal example of this. You know, with my younger daughter, Yael, I tend to baby her a little bit because she's a little one. She's going to be 6 next month. And I still, a lot of the times, help her get undressed and dressed. I take that over responsibility for her. And it is not serving her at all because it's really robbing her of the self-confidence of doing it on her own. So for a moment, take a moment and just consider how you might have always thought that your overgiving is serving others. Think of the ways that you've kind of believed that. I'm not talking about like aligned giving, right, or aligned responsibility. Right? So in the case of my daughter, there are like harder turtlenecks that she still does really need my help with, right? I should help her with those. I'm not talking about aligned responsibility or aligned giving, but think about the ways that you've been overgiving or taking over responsibility and you've just fallen into the belief that it's of service. And note for yourself how this may actually not be true, that it's not of service. And take a moment with that, in particular if you're thinking about clients, like what they might benefit, what the benefit for them may be if you were to uphold the boundaries that are and not overgive and not take over responsibility. Another reason, common reason, for having trouble setting boundaries or upholding boundaries is that you're scared you'll be alone or unloved. This one is truly at the core for almost anyone in one way or another who struggles with boundaries. The core wound of the undeveloped warrior is the fear that you'll be alone if you aren't overgiving. The core wound of the undeveloped warrior is the fear that in one way or another you'll be alone if you're not taking responsibility for everything. You're scared that your clients won't want to buy from you, or your friends will leave you, or your team members will be horrified, right, if you put boundaries in place, right, whatever it is. You're scared of being alone. Even if you think of yourself as a super independent person, are there areas in your life where you have a fear of being alone in one way or another? Take a moment and consider that for yourself. All right, the next reason, I know I'm going through this quickly. Hopefully you guys are getting the pieces that you need here. But the next reason why you might have trouble with boundaries or upholding boundaries is the fear of not being good enough. So if you don't think that your skills are good enough, then it's really hard to enforce your rates or when people pay late or whatever it is, because in your mind you're like, oh, it wasn't good enough in the first place. How can I enforce the rates here? Or if you're scared that you're not good enough, you may have the tendency to go over in your session time, right? Because you feel like you haven't given enough. Or if you feel like you're not good enough, you may send out the contract to a client, but you know, sometimes clients won't sign right away. But you feel scared to ask them to sign because you're scared then they're going to be like, you know what, forget it. I don't want to do the work together. And then the last reason that I want to look at right now for not holding boundaries is that you're scared of either another person's anger or your own anger. If you're scared of another person's anger or your own anger, it's really hard to uphold boundaries. And this one is a doozy I have found, especially for women. So I want you to really try this one on for size and see if it applies to you. In general, in society, we're just not taught how to properly manage our anger. We're not taught that anger is a natural emotion that comes up for all human beings. And instead, we're taught in subtle or not so subtle ways to ignore anger or to avoid anger or to fear anger. The majority of examples in popular culture that deal with anger illustrate the emotion as a terrible, overwhelming emotion that ends up in killing or destroying or hurting. Now, of course, that's one possible expression of anger, but really, that's an expression of anger when anger is in shadow, when it isn't managed correctly and used correctly. But most people don't fully realize that, and instead we come to fear anger. And the result of fearing anger is often that we try to over-accommodate others instead of setting and upholding boundaries, or we try to cover up our own anger at somebody else by over-giving. That one is less common but can come up. to cover up our own anger at someone else by overgiving. So there are other reasons for not being able to set or uphold boundaries, but I've found that these are some of the biggest. So for you, just based on what we've been looking at so far, what other thoughts have sparked in this conversation, what do you think the biggest reason is for you, for wherever you're having trouble with boundaries, establishing them or upholding them? Is it not trusting others? Is it not feeling good enough? Is it fear of being alone? Is it fear of your anger, other people's anger? Or is it something else? It's just good for you to note for yourself. Okay, I would love to hear shares on this. I'm not going to take shares on this right now or do coaching on this right now. I'll leave some time at the end of our call. I want to make sure that I get through some of the other logistical pieces that I want to get through, and then we'll circle back around to what's come up through this conversation. The reason why, again, why I take the time for us to look in this way before we look at the actual, like, what are the materials that are needed, which I'm going to get into right now. But again, the reason is because I can give you a list of all of the materials and the contracts and all the things and how and when and all of that. But if these energetic pieces that we've spoken about are off kilter for you, you're not going to put them into place or you're not going to uphold them, right? So it's really important. Okay. All that being said, let's do a run through of materials for systems, logistics, all of these things that we've been talking about that help establish the containers. So here are the materials that you probably want to have in place. Wait. Guys, hold on one second. As part of this whole pandemic, my kids are home and they're making a racket upstairs. Let me just ask them to be quiet. Hey, kids. Thank you. All right. Sorry, you guys. All right. So as I said earlier, before you even get to your first session, there are a couple of things that you want to have in place for that really strong and solid container. Number one, I always like at the end of the enrollment conversation, the sales call, you know, whatever you want to call it, before I get off the phone, like once someone has said yes and they want to work together, I don't just say great, you know, and then we get off the phone, right? So I take their payment information, right? And I let them know how they're going to be charged and when they're going to be charged. I let them know what's going to happen next. So what I mean by that is I let them know, you know, Talia is going to send out a contract and she's going to send out a welcome packet and the welcome packet is going to have all of these things and look for this, right? So that we're not like walking into a mystery here, but again, we're establishing the container. We're establishing expectations. And also it's something for them to be excited about. Not so much the contract, but I make the welcome packet sound exciting with the questionnaire and all the things. And then the other thing that I always like to do is schedule our first call. That's part of setting the container. Again, we have, you know, they've said yes, and we already have our first call on the calendar, right? So all of this I do on the sales call as soon as someone has said yes. I do it, the order I just shared it with you actually isn't the order I do it in. I explain to them what happens next. The welcome packet, the contract, then I schedule the first call, and then the last thing is I ask for the payment. It kind of softens it a little bit. From there, before we even get to our first session via email, the client will get an opportunity to schedule out all of their sessions beforehand. So we've scheduled our first session on the phone, but I actually really like to schedule out everything beforehand so that there's that container, there's that matrix. Now, you want to think about scheduling with clients you want to think about consistency. So what I mean by that is, let's say your package is 12 sessions over 6 months, then you want to say to your client, you want to recommend that they schedule, you know, probably every other week, right? You don't want them to have like a session and then not another session for a month. Again, think about the container and the matrix that scheduling holds. Now, of course, if somebody's going on vacation or they have something special, you know, a lot of times when I do business coaching, if there's a particular launch, we may have more sessions around the launch, right? Like, so you're going to plan around that too, but think about what kind of consistency you want with your sessions. The other reason why it's important to do this is so that people don't go over their time. One of the most annoying things, just from a business point of view, is when you've signed a client, let's say for a 6 month cycle, but they haven't scheduled, you know, they're just kind of scheduling as they need. And then you're about to hit 6 months and they have like 4 sessions left, right? That's not so good from business flow point of view. So anyway, we work with all the scheduling. I'm going to give you all of my scheduling templates so that you have them. The other thing that goes out before I start working with someone, after they've said yes, but before our first session, is a welcome letter. It's a warm letter. It's not long, just really celebrating that we're going to be working together, affirming the client's choice to do the work together. Just really helping the client feel seen and special and excited. The contract will go out. I will not start coaching a client one-on-one until they have signed their contract. Just from a legal standpoint, that it feels really important to me. Usually Talia will send out the contract, and I believe she asks people to sign it within 48 hours, and we do that electronically. And then the other thing that gets sent out, as you've heard me already mention today, is a welcome questionnaire. I really put a lot of stock in the welcome questionnaire. It's like where the work really begins. I mean, the work really begins in the enrollment process, but I'm someone that loves to answer questions for myself. My clients tend to really love to do that too. You want to include, and this is really important. Sometimes people overlook this, but part of that questionnaire, you want to ask personal information questions. You want to make sure that you have your client's phone number. You want to make sure that you have their mailing address. I can't tell you, there have been times where I've had clients, you know, that say to me about their own clients, like, I don't have her phone number. Like, how do you not have her phone number, right? You need that stuff. I like to sometimes ask, you know, if they have a partner, and if so, what is the partner's name? Who else lives in the house with them? You know, do they have children? If so, what ages? What are the names? Do they have any pets? It's good, nice information to have so that you know a little bit about, right, like what's your client's life and who is in their immediate, you know, right there with them. And then from there, after I get I like to get their birthday. It's nice to know when clients' birthdays are and wish them a happy birthday and, you know, all of that. And then from there, we go into deeper questions, and I think I already provided an example, but you'll get it again in the resource packet for this week. Some of my favorite questions that I like to ask, I ask about short-term goals and long-term goals. So what would you like to accomplish in the first 3 months that we're working together? I tend to work with clients for a year at a time, so I'll ask, you know, in our first year, but even if we're not have the year engagement, you know, where would you like to be in a year? We've already, of course, looked at these pieces or some of them in the sales, the enrollment conversation, but it's good to have them and for them to write it out. I like to ask clients about their strengths and resources. I like to ask clients about their habits. Depending on what I'm helping a client with, there's just some background information that I like to get from them. Like if I'm working with them on marketing, I'm going to ask what marketing strategies do they already have in place, you know, how if they have a newsletter community, how many people are in the community, you know, what is their current messaging. So I like to kind of, and again, it's good for the client to just do that exercise too. I ask about habits. I like to ask how I can best support the client. Sometimes in the questionnaire, I'll ask what's the best way to hold you accountable? What's the best way to call you out on your BS, right? Do I have permission to, you know, follow up on you? You know, so I'll ask some questions like that. I'll ask them about their resistance, what resistances they have to the work. I like to do just like a catch-all, you know, is there anything else that hasn't been mentioned in these questions that I need to know, right? So, for example, you know, just kind of like to have that catch-all. So, for example, you sometimes it will come up that a client will say, you know, I didn't mention this on the sales call and none of the questions I asked would be pertinent, but it's important to know I'm in the middle of a divorce right now, or I have a parent that's very ill, or I have this ongoing illness, or, you know, whatever it is. I'm in the middle of selling my home, right? So I just like to ask like anything else that's important for me to know right now. So all of those things come before you even get to your first session. Now, there's some things you may want to consider, some protocols or templates to put in place while you're working with a client. Now, just go through those. I promise we'll have plenty of time at the end for questions on any of this. I ask my clients to send me a progress report, or you can call it an accountability form or a prep form, before each and every one of our sessions. And I'll share with you the template I use. But you adapt it for yourself and the type of work that you do. The reason why I like to have the prep form or the accountability form is that it keeps the client, it's just part of the work for the client to keep them connected in with their goals and, you know, what they want and all of that. And it's a way for me as the practitioner to easily and quickly get any background information that I need to know on the client's progress through since the last session that we have, particularly if we hadn't had a lot of email in between sessions. It's also a great tool for accountability, you know, just for keeping the client accountable. So some of the big things, and I have a template, but I do like to personalize for different clients, and I'll explain what I mean by that in a moment. But some of the big things that I like to hit in the progress report is, number one, the first question I always ask is for clients to list celebrations since the last call, right? We've already looked in this training at why celebrating is so important. I always like, you know, even if things aren't going so great, there's still always something to acknowledge, to honor, to celebrate. The focus report helps people be in practice of that. And so I asked that, and I asked the question, you know, what would you like to celebrate since our last session? And then I always leave three bullet points, so that idea is they have to list at least three things. I ask what their big goal is. Even though they know what their big goal is, we've already established that at the beginning of our work together. I know what the big goal is. I put it in there for accountability. And I also put it in there so that the client can stay connected to their goals. And I also put it in there for them to see if maybe their goals are shifting. I ask them what inner wisdom has been coming through since our last session together, right? Because for me and my clients, it's very important to be in practice of connecting in with inner wisdom. I ask clients what they'd like to focus on during the session that we're going to have. It's a great way to leverage time, and it helps the client get organized beforehand to think about, you know, what is it that they really want to be able to focus on. And then when I read it beforehand, it helps me as the practitioner manage the time. If I see that they have three things that they want to get done, you know, I've got them, of course, at the beginning of the call, I'm asking what their intentions are, so we're going over it again. Also, sometimes I see what they want to focus on. I could say, like, oh, gosh, they have five items on this. You know, three of them are relevant for now. One we can really look at in our next session, and the other I can just tell them over email what to do. So those are the big things I like to hit on the progress report. But as I said, I will personalize for clients. So if I'm working with clients on marketing, I may have a question there. What marketing have you done since our last time together, our last session together? If in a particular session the client and I have established that maybe she's going to start a meditation practice, you know, we may add a question onto that progress report. How has it been going with the meditation practice? You know, so that you can add and take away different things and personalize it to really make that prep form or that progress report a living, breathing, really useful exercise for the client. So I like to have that before every session. I ask the clients submit it within 24 hours. The reason why I like to do that is because I will read them, and then, you know, it's like I marinate on them, and ideas come to me throughout the next day for my client. But I will just tell you guys right now, some clients will do that. Some clients will be early in doing it, and then some will be late. They'll send it to you last minute. Every now and again, you'll get a client who just can't do the progress report. They're not going to do it. And what I have learned over time is that you can't make anyone do anything. So there are just some clients that aren't going to do it. Sometimes I like to do, like, especially with longer-term clients, if I'm working with someone for a year, although if you're working with someone for 6 months, I recommend this as well, to do a halfway progress report or even a midway call. And the purpose of either the halfway progress report or the midway call is to take time in the middle of the cycle together to really assess, okay, what's been accomplished so far, what's going really well, what are the ways the client has moved forward on the inner and outer levels, and then what's not working so well, you know, where are the places that need to be tightened up? What are the things that are still in their way that, you know, we want to make sure we get to in the second half of the cycle together? Sometimes you can use that to reassess where you want to get to by the end of the time together, right? So, like, sometimes I'll start working with a client, and the goal for the time together is to, I don't know, let's say, you know, earn X amount of money by the end of the year. If they've earned that by the middle of the year, that halfway assessment, you know, we can reassess. You can do that on any session anyway. It doesn't have to be there, right? And by the way, sometimes the opposite happens too, right? We haven't reached the goal, and it looks like we may not totally reach that goal by the end of the time that we've engaged for, and so we recalibrate. And then in terms of just during the time together, the other system that I have in place is I do a next steps call when people are coming to the end of our contracted time together. The purpose of the next steps call is to really kind of take a look at and honor and integrate all of the work that we've done together, and if appropriate, look at continuing to work together. Our very last Sacred Depths call, I will go step by step by step on how to do a next steps process for a client that you would like to continue working with. Whether you want to continue working with a client or not, or it makes sense or not, you do want to think about how you end the container. Ending is just as important as beginning, right? We've seen that even just when it comes to a session. We don't just ask intentions at the beginning of the session, but we look at takeaways at the end. Ending is just as important as beginning. What is it that this client is going to remember, right? So those are the materials. And then I just wanted to note that client care is part of the container. It's part of the relationship with the client, and it has its own energy to it. So what I mean by this is that you have your protocols and your rules, scheduling, rescheduling, payment, you know, all the things we've spoken about. But what I want you to really think about is that it's not just the what of, you know, what are these policies, but it's the how. So, for example, what's the language that you're using in your client care email? Whether you're doing client care or you have an assistant that's doing your client care. When I say client care, what I mean is scheduling, rescheduling, contracts, payments, you know, all the different things. Can't access the recording, you know, all of that. So, you know, even for, like, you guys in this group, my team is trained and versed in the energy of how I communicate. What I mean by that is if, let's say, you can't find a recording or whatever it is, and one of my team members is responding, they're not just like, here's the recording, hopefully. I mean, sometimes I think they do that, but, you know, I'm so happy to help you. Here's the recording, right? Or if I have a client that wants to reschedule, Talia doesn't just send an email like, okay, when do you want to reschedule? The energy of the email is like, oh, I'm so happy to help you with this. Hope everything is okay, right? Whatever it is, here's how we can reschedule. So you want to think about the energy of the communication. A couple of other just random notes that I want to kind of note around client care. Think about how quickly you respond to emails. So for most people who tend to be attracted to me, you probably over-respond, meaning like you respond right away. You're uber-responsible. We already spoke about that. But in case you fall into the category of like sitting on things, just take note that that impacts the container, and usually not positively. So you can be having the most amazing sessions with your clients and creating so much transformation and results and all of that. But if a client sends you an email and you consistently take a week to respond, the client probably isn't going to feel great about that, right? Unless that's part of your protocol. You know, that's, you set that up as an expectation beforehand. I, on the client end of things, I can tell you I've had a couple of experiences like that where it's like the practitioner has been great. They've been brilliant when we've been in session, but they're so bad at follow-up in between sessions that I haven't been willing to continue to work with them. So, you know, and along with that, are you following up on things you said that you would share or you would send? And then I already spoke about texts and all of that, but I'll just say, like, my two cents and personal opinion. It depends on your business and how you communicate with your clients, but I've found that texting tends to put practitioners into over-responsibility mode or overwork mode. So if you do allow text communication with clients, just be clear on what your boundaries are with that. Same with Voxer. Voxer is recorded voice memos. I do use Voxer with my private clients. but they know that I'm not on it all day long. They know that they have to send me an email to let me know that they've left me a Voxer. They know that it sometimes takes a little bit longer for me to get back on a Voxer. Last piece before I open up for questions is just on the very first session that I have with a new client, one of the other little things that I do to really set a strong container is I remind, even though I've said this already, probably in the sales call, I will remind the client, I will take 5 minutes at the beginning of the call to just go over logistics and container setting and you tell them how we're going to be working together and all the things. But the most important part of that is that I remind the client about how I'm there for her and how I'm showing up for her. I let her know, and so that she can like really hear it heartfelt, that I want her to let me know throughout our work what she needs and how I can help her. I remind her, you know, because I do have email as part of my service, I remind her that she can email me in between sessions and that I encourage her to email me in between sessions. And I really want to hear from her. And then the other thing that I do in a first session, again, just part of the container setting, is in addition to takeaways, right, which I'm always going to do, at the end of a very first session, I'll ask the client, you know, so how did this first session go for you? And I'll also ask, like, is there anything that you would like for us to be doing differently, or, you know, any way that we have already, we've worked together in the session that you would like to be tweaked? Just little flourishes that they can go a long way with the container setting. Okay. So I want you to take a moment, speaking of takeaways, and note for yourself, what's your biggest takeaway from our call today? What are you really taking for yourself? What's important? I'm going to open up for Q&A in a moment, but I'll just tell you what you'll find in your member center, and it'll probably be tomorrow, not today. We're a little bit behind team-wise because of everything going on in the world, but you'll get a packet of lots of different templates to template for client scheduling and rescheduling, an end of program template, a new client contract, a new and continuing client welcome email, pre-session form that I was talking about, resign, like I've got a whole bunch of different templates for you. So that's just there as a resource. And then I want to invite you to start working on these for yourself if you don't have them in place. If you do have them in place, if you're a seasoned practitioner, this is a great moment to go back and review and, you know, shift and tweak anything that you see that's come up through our time together today. And then the other piece of homework is, and I want to hear in a moment share about what came up around the warrior woman pieces I was talking about, the inner pieces, and any outer logistical questions. But if you could really see some stuff that you have to work on when it comes to your warrior archetype, I want to invite you to write a letter to yourself from the highest level of your warrior and see what this one has to say to you. All right, so star two, I'd love to hear any questions on inner or outer pieces or any takeaways from our time together today. Star two. Stephanie.
Hi, yeah, I just have sort of a logistical question. You were mentioning having sort of like a midway call and then like a next steps call. And I'm curious, like, would you include those? Like, if you're saying like, this is a 10 session package, are you including those in that number? Or
if I'm going to do a midway call, if I know from the get-go that I'm going to do a midway call, I'll include it in it because it's like value added. And you can absolutely do it with the next steps also. I don't generally, like, up front say we're going to have the next steps call. I usually kind of spring it as, like, a bonus gift with which clients really appreciate. There's sometimes when I don't always do a midway call. There's sometimes when I'm not planning on doing a midway call, but I feel around mid-cycle with a client that it actually would make sense to just gift them. It may not even be a full session time, but to gift them some time to like retrack a little bit. And so sometimes I'll just add that in.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Good question. Melissa.
Yeah, I'm finding it very interesting. You started by talking about your fears, and my biggest fear is my lack of space and being swallowed up because I've got three other adults and two children here in the house, and the warrior work was, you know, that's the answer. You know, the idea of not being loved, you know, because of the role that I've been playing in the family. You know, I just step in all the time and just to keep peace in the house because there's so many of us here. And, yeah, it's just I thank you for all of that because it's just it's not for me to hope that they'll all go away. The answer is that they're getting stuck in the house with me and that I have to do my inner work on my warrior self. So I'm looking forward to seeing what she writes to me on that one, and I think this, it's just amazingly well-timed.
Good. I'm so, so glad that that resonates.
Yeah.
And when we do reschedule our shadow training, which will happen, I promise,
right.
That's one of the issues that we're going to be looking at deeply because usually warrior is in shadow for lots of different reasons.
Right. I'm also, you know, I've been tagged in my family of origin as the big B, you know, because I speak out. And so there's that dance of fear and wanting to be loved and, you know, just handling things and, you know, all of that. It's interesting.
Well, good. So I'm glad you'll start working with your warrior and see what happens there.
Yeah, working with her in a deeper, kinder way. Yeah. She doesn't need to have a battle axe, you know.
No, she doesn't. Good.
Yeah. So thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Sorry. Hold on. Christine.
Hi, Joanna. Thank you very much. This has been really good. I really love the way you started with the vulnerabilities, which then allowed us to really look into that before we went into the hardcore, quote-unquote, work. So thank you very much for that. I'm wondering about, like, if you're contracted to go into a company, like I'm in discussions with one, I hope it materializes.
Yay.
But their issue is around, well, that's well, holding, you know, but I don't know, but they're trying to deal with conflict. And I'm just wondering, with the container, how do we, with one person, I can see how it would work, but what does one do about creating and maintaining a container for a group of people?
Yeah, it's such a great question. So what I would love for you to do is actually take a little time and think about, you know, based on what we looked at today for one-on-one, mm-hmm. what are the issues that would come up when working for a corporation, you know, and what are the protocols?
Okay.
So, you know, for example, some of it's going to be, you know, how many people are you going to be working with? How will you be working with them? What is the amount of time? You know, what is the confidentiality if you speak with an employee? Mm-hmm. And, you know, are the managers going to want to know? Or, you know, so
yes.
I want
right.
you to
okay.
think through based on the type of work that you do, what are the kinds of issues that could come up that you want to make sure that you have agreements on.
Right. Okay.
And I'm happy
Thank
to take
you.
A look at that list once you've made it.
I would be very grateful. I'll work on that because we've scheduled a call and, of course, a online call next week. So it would be good for me to have thought about all of that so that I can ask some of those questions, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, post it at the Facebook group because you're not the only person doing corporate work, so it'll be instructive
Fantastic.
For everybody.
I'll do that. Yeah. All right. Thank you. Bye.
You're welcome. And Lucia.
My takeaway is that if I really do take myself serious and do take my business serious, I got to have this stuff in place.
Yes. I just got chills when you said that 100%.
And
I think
back.
You are really getting to a place where you're taking your work and your business way more seriously.
Yeah, and this brings me to what we have discussed earlier when I shared about the 5D personality
mm-hmm.
that just doesn't like paperwork at all and doesn't like bureaucracy at all. Like, that's
yeah.
one of my most anxiety topics.
Yeah,
and
yeah, I know.
My heart race. So much.
Yeah. So I'm trying to make it as easy as possible for you and everybody by sharing the template. So the idea is that you just really have to tweak a little bit here and there to have those materials. And then what I'd say is from there, create a system for yourself where it's almost like a chart. So for each person, you just have a checklist so that you can keep track of what you're sending them. And then for someone like you, as soon as you have the resources, it probably makes sense to hire somebody to be working your systems for you.
Yeah.
So not yet, right? Like, you want to bring on client, you know, all the things, but,
yeah.
You know, usually it costs somewhere around $25 an hour for somebody else to do it, especially if you have the templates and the system, which you're getting from me.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd say, like, as soon as it makes sense, and you and I can talk more about that, you know, to see when the right moment is, you probably just want to hand that over because that's not a strength of yours. That's not where your mind really should be, you know, like, you should be focusing attention, but until you get there, as a business owner, you kind of have to.
Yeah. And do you feel it's as necessary for working one-on-one life as it is for working online with people?
I do. The contract, like all of, again, it's just back to the container setting, the expectations. Mm-hmm. You know, if you don't want to have a progress report for your work, like the prep form, that may, they may not need that for you. You know, you can experiment with that. But in terms of the contract and the welcome packet and being clear on the protocols for scheduling and rescheduling and payment, I do feel that those are really important.
Yeah, I feel I could get a help around this. You know, I have a friend who's a lawyer. I could maybe ask her if she would be willing to sit with me.
Yeah, yeah. You know, if you know, like, your 5D person and this isn't your big thing, having someone hold the space with you to help you move mm-hmm. through it is one of the best ways to go. Mm-hmm. So, absolutely.
Okay, cool. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome. All right, everyone, please post more of your takeaways in our group. Any other questions that come up as you move through this material, I'm here for you. I'm here for you in general. I'm sending you all so much love. Know that I'm thinking about you, and I want to hear from you. So I'll talk to you soon. Bye.
The moderator has left the conference.